The opinions expressed on Ann's Time do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Impro Mafia. But just because I'm wholly accountable for my actions isn't going to stop me. Impro Mafia presents Ann's Time. Welcome to Ann's Time, a podcast for improvisers and aspiring improvisers. I'm Dan Beeston, Impro Mafia's tech boy.
And I'm Greg Robot, the haunter of the Impro Zeitgeist.
Is that your title now?
I've been thinking about that for ages. It's bad.
Nice. Oh, look, business cards.
That's right,
look at that. Right. Author, Impro Zeitgeist.
Haunter of the Impro Zeitgeist. Mm. I'm like some sort of Impro Cthulian beast.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
I.e. created by an anti-Semite. There you go. Mm. You've learned something about H.P. Lovecraft. He was an anti-Semite.
I'm enjoying drinking what we're going to pretend is alcohol.
Yes, yes. Mint juleps on the porch.
Yep.
While you watch
with ice.
While you watch the slaves pick the coffin. Coffin? Oops. I mean, Freudian slip. The cotton. There you go.
Oh my god, already so far.
A good start. Yes. At least we're not talking about horrible things.
Just slavery. Nothing bad about that.
Whoops.
Yeah.
Showing my true colours there. White. I got very freaked out listening to one of these podcasts recently where I wasn't involved. I wasn't in it. You weren't talking about me or anything I'd been in. I wasn't at all. And something horrible got... I think something about pedophilia got mentioned. I think it was Gavcor. Love you, Gavcor. And then suddenly you went, Greg's not even here. And I went, that's what I am. I'm defined by... Even in my absence, I am defined by this concept of what I am.
You're haunting our zeitgeist.
I am haunting... And there it is. That's why I'm there, baby. I'm there to haunt you. You don't need to go there because I already live there.
All right. Well, why don't we discuss what's been going on in Impro since the last podcast?
Oh, yes.
First and foremost, we've started up yet another rookie show.
We can't be stopped.
Yeah. Oh, you can if you put me in charge of it. Boom, put your uncle.
Dead.
That duck's dead.
Well, you've been to the new one yet at all, have you?
Well, of course you have. Sorry. Of course I have. I've been there every single week playing music.
Oh, God. Yes, you're that guy. That's why I don't recognize you.
I'm the sound.
Look, I'm going to let you finish. Dan. But, you know, I'm very proud of you. I'm sure you've got a very good podcast here. I'm sure it's very good. I just have to say, though, that Cameron Watson had the best impro podcast of all time. And I'm just saying of all time. So you just, you know, I'm going to let you finish. I'm sure it's a very nice podcast you got here, but I'm just saying of all time. That's all I'm saying.
Wow. She's even peaking the waveforms like Kanye does.
We've just been memed. We've just been utterly memed.
I feel like we should play get Keyboard Cat to play us out.
Don't tell. God, I hope she didn't hear that. She will. She'll race off and get that. So that's terrifying. We've just been, not Rickrolled, but it's as close to...
Natrolled.
We've been Natrolled. Oh, God, never say that. She's slim and svelte. What are you talking about? Wait, hang on.
She's like a pug.
I like to think of...
Oh, God, you're going to kill me when I don't edit this good out.
I like to think of one of those hairless cats. You know, the ones with no hair? The kind of, you know, all the skin. Yeah,
she's going to regret that Kanye joke. She's in there sitting on the couch thinking that she's gotten away scot-free.
And now we're just... And look, she's eating a Tim Tam. That's how ironic.
Let's not get into that.
Weren't we discussing the rookie show?
We were. Yes, we were. It's called The Speakeasy.
Which is a great name.
It really is. It's one of those things that come up. You can't plan
because
it.
It's so ironic.
Well, it's got many levels. It's
because they're rookies and they have such a hard time speaking.
Mm.
But they should whisper down the back of the stage.
They do. They all stand at the back like kids in a line. It's beautiful. I love watching them. It's so cute. The last time I went to it, I was sitting there going, "Move forward!" Even though I had nothing to do with the running of it, I was, "Move forward! Speak up!" And you're like, "Oh God, I'm an audience member. I can't just yell random shit from the side." Well, I can, and I did. But you're not meant to. It confuses the rest of the audience, who then think they can heckle, which is what happened. So the drunk guy at the back, because he saw me calling out side coaching, thought that it was like heckle everyone night. So he was sort of going, "This is shit," or "What's this about?" Because he was very, very drunk. But what was really good was the pub was really good because they were telling him to be quiet, and they were saying, "Oh, you should be quiet, and you should, you know."
But that guy's telling them to speak up. Yeah, they have to speak up.
Yeah, I don't think he cared what I was saying. I was just, he heard my voice. So.
Yeah.
No, it's really good. Speakeasy is one of those wonderful names that wasn't planned. It was literally Natalie Bansky, who runs it, came up with the name. It was just called The Rookie Show, The Rookie Show, The Rookie Show. And we're like, we'll come up with a fantastic name for it. And then I can't remember which movie it was. She was watching.
I can tell you, because she told me the name. And I was like, "You were watching The Simpsons yesterday, weren't you?"
Oh,
and you were
the
watching
Baron.
The Beer Baron episode of The Simpsons.
It. That's what it was, yes. But the Speakeasy is a pun. Because they want you to speak easy. It's improv, you're making it up. But of course, it's a speakeasy. It's in a pub. So it's genius. genius. And we've got a fantastic poster, too, by Mr. Paul Russell, who's not an improviser, but he is a watcher of Impro. He likes Impro. He likes Impro Mafia. And he, with the magic of Facebook and Twitter and other things I'm not part of, she managed to get in contact with him and said, hey, can you do this thing for me? And he went, yeah, I'd love to. And what we discovered later, that he's such a nice man, because we've discovered that one of his loved ones had just died. So he's like mourning the loss of a loved one, and suddenly on, like, bling, do this cool thing for me. And he went, oh, okay, I will. So well done to Paul for doing that. And he did a great job too.
Yes, I noticed you're open sourcing all the design.
Yes.
As soon as there was any talk of any money going into my back pocket.
Hey, if we get someone to do it for free, we would go there first. But it's actually fun seeing different ideas, different people and how they do it. There's one, I might ask him if it's okay. I don't know if he'll be able to put it on the website. But Sean Dowling, he's done a mock-up poster for Prog Death, and it's utterly different to what you've done. It's a very different style. I kept thinking if we actually make Prog Death 28 days later Prog Death, you know, with high-speed zombies and blood and violence, make it a more surreal, make it a more...
visceral?
Yes, and more dangerous show. Instead of comedy, if we were trying to do a horror show, I'd use his poster. But it's a bit much. It's like blood splats and kind of, it makes it look, you go, oh God, it looks like violent death. So I went, oh, we probably should go with the wackier one.
Yeah, I get so jealous when you get other illustrators and stuff in. I go, oh, all this fucking artwork. I don't want to do this anymore. I've just got to do it in the flyers and posters. We've got someone else to do this poster. You fucking what? Get out.
This is, makes you work harder next
time.
She's
my bitch. You stay away from her.
I can slap her in the mouth. You can't even look at her. Fair enough. But the rookie show is really good. We have some really talented rookies as well. Some people, names I'm not going to give, not because I don't want to give names, because I don't remember them. I'm terrible with names. But I watched people last Monday where I went, oh, you're very good, and you're very good. And they were working, not because they were doing anything amazing, but they were on stage committing to what they did with a smile on their face. And even if it tanks, which sometimes it does, especially with newer players.
There's quite a bit of graceful failing, which was quite nice.
There's bucket loads of it. And that might sound like a negative, but it wasn't. It was a positive to watch. Al did it beautifully. Al not failed. Al knew how to... Al Crawford would walk on stage. He's not a rookie in any way, shape or form. He would step on stage when a scene was tanking, and he would end it, absolutely beautifully end it, and just one scene with a smile on his face. Sometimes it would be, this shit is over. And it was just hilarious to have someone go, someone, I'm big enough and man enough to call this down.
Yeah.
This, it's over. The judges aren't doing it. The magicians aren't doing it. No one's just watching the horror.
Not only that, but he knew that he could save scenes in some instances as well. So he'd jump on in some, there's one scene where it was like, oh, it's really guest chamber jokes.
Yes, yeah, we're gonna
and then yeah. And I'm like, I'm sitting there going, I don't know how I'd rescue this I wish everyone in the audience had a horn.
Yes.
And then Al just jumped up and then just did a scene change to a Thunderbirds
style that's
thing.
Right.
And it just went, oh, this is what we, yeah, no, that, this is fun.
It was the Schindler's List 2.
Yeah. Oh, God.
I think it's a great offer. There's so much in that. But of course, the first thing that the person, whoever it was, went for was gas chambers. And you're like, why are you going there? Not in a fun way.
No.
in a real, get in the gas chamber. And you're like, oh, don't do that. But anyway, you learn these things, supposedly. I don't know if I have. Gas chambers are always funny.
I must admit a bit of a weakness for going down that path. Especially when everyone else is desperately trying not to.
Yes.
Oh, I love that. I love it when everyone's going, oh, look, we're doing it. We're getting away with it. We're doing an entire scene about cancer, and it's fun and friendly and doing well. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to fuck this up. Oh, there's nothing like it. Don't do it. Don't do it, anyone listening.
To those, as it says here, aspiring improvisers.
Yeah. You shouldn't do it.
No.
You should leave it for me. Yeah, that's right.
Only Dan gets to do it. Dan's the Jimmy Carr of Brisbane Impro. He gets to be the Dark Prince of Impro.
I think she wants us to mention her. I think we've already done that.
We have, yeah, she doesn't realise. How much mentioning she gets.
Oh, yeah.
No, look, Natalie runs it, and Natalie and Lauren run it. Natalie is our president, Natalie Bohensky, and Lauren Staines is our vice president, and they both run Speakeasy, and they run it very well, and they run it very smoothly. We would actually invite improvisers of all stripes and colours, if you're trained in any way, really, to come on down and be part of it. I think it's a good experience for people to get on that stage, and it's a nice little stage, and just be part of the cheap drinks. They're going to give us cheap drinks, that's the other thing. Cheap
cocktails.
Yes. That's it, cocktail. So Manhattans and that sort of stuff. That's pretty cool. So we're going to sit around with our hats on and with our six shooters.
I had a gin sling the other week. It was lovely.
Very nice.
And cheap meals too. $10
$10
for steak. I mean, the steak tastes like it. is only worth $10, but that's all right. The chips taste like $100 worth of chips. Chips are thick. I've never tasted chips like this place before.
Oh, really?
I love them.
Oh, okay. I heard the wedges because I went in and said, I'm a vegetarian. What can you do for me? And she said, chips. And I went, oh, you don't have a vegetarian option?
You can serve your live cow.
You can punch it all you like.
Would you like nothing with a side of salad?
With some scorn.
No one eats the salad. There's plenty left over.
We can't know, because I asked for a bowl of salad, because it says, like, for an extra $3, you can have a bowl of salad. So I asked for a bowl of salad for $3, and she said, no, it's a side to a meal. And you're like, what? Like, can't I just have the side? Surely it doesn't cost extra to make, you know what I mean? It's one of those. But anyway, it's...
They probably don't make any profit on it.
No, it's just greens, I suppose. But anyway, I had wedges, and they were nice wedges. So there you go. Phew. But Speakeasy is a lot of fun, and watching new people play and make ridiculous mistakes is fantastic. I love the mistakes. And you go, oh, look at that. They're just, oh, it's wonderful.
I've started playing the guitar at the Speakeasy. The guitar is probably not the most dynamic instrument to do improv music with. You tend to be able to do a lot more with an electronic keyboard.
Yes.
So far as hitting a bunch of different genres, but I can't play different genres anyway. Mm. So all I'm doing is like filling in the background, filling in the bits of silence with strumming.
That's right. And it works for what it is. Not intrusive music, which improv music shouldn't be intrusive.
Mm.
And you are doing well, but you're only new at it, so you're just finding your feet and what you can do and what you can add.
What I need to do is sit down with someone who knows what they're doing and have them teach me all the little tricks that they've learned.
Mr. Peachy.
And unfortunately, Peachy's overseas, so I'm probably going to get together with Chris.
Yes.
And he plays the guitar a little bit and may be able to help me out with a couple of bits and pieces.
I had a conversation with him recently about other things as well, but about music and I don't play. I don't play instruments. But he was saying how there are certain tricks. He said you can do these very set tricks, and they're the very basic tricks. But you follow these basic tricks, and then from there you can build up an actual repertoire of interesting things.
I need to learn all of those guys.
Yeah, it's like six different things you do, or five different things. I was too busy staring into his beautiful Canadian eyes to notice. Over a hot Sunday, I think it was. It was lovely. We can actually. I'll out us now. We're working together. He's helping me on a secret project for next year for Impro Mafia.
Mm-hmm.
A secret impro project. Actually, I can't really say much. It hasn't been chosen by the artistic director. It hasn't been. I'm not waiting for permission. I'm not saying it's going to be on, but I'm starting now. I'm getting involved. I'm thinking ideas. Mm-hmm. I'm going to put it all together. And Chris Anderson, being Chris Anderson, wrote the theme song for it.
Yeah. I, too, am working on a secret project with him, which you don't know about.
Oh, excellent. Oh, yeah. Very exciting. It's always secret.
Mine's project. Not anywhere near as exciting as yours.
How would you know? It's obviously not that secret.
I think you told me.
Oh,
in fact, I think I know the only other thing that you're totally excited about, which you mentioned a couple of minutes ago.
Yes.
And I'm like, it's probably that one.
It's probably that one, yeah. I'm very excited by it. I'm actually thinking, how's this for weird? I don't know if this is right for the podcast or not, but you can edit it out if you wish. I'm actually thinking of making it multimodal. And actually, I've been listening to podcasts and talking about multimodal. You know, like Avatar is multimodal. The movie, James Cameron's Avatar, the movie with all the fairies running around. And
multimodal?
Is it multimodal? That's right.
What does that mean?
Comes from different mediums. Multimedium, you can say multimedia, but so there are comic books and there are movies and there are computer games. Not just like Spider-Man retelling the same story, but doing different versions of that universe. So you can watch the Avatar movie, but you can play the computer game, which gives more information. And you can,
Or the Matrix or something.
Matrix online game was like that. Yeah, you can play in that universe, but you're not playing that movie.
Yeah.
So that sounds very wanky, right? Now, Greg Grebel is creating a multimodal. I just thought, I have an idea that'll fit the impro stage really well, I think. But what's on stage won't be exactly what I see in my mind, so I want to then think about doing web comics and that sort of stuff, and having online content and things that can, and music. I really like the idea that you could have a song for it that you could show people. Hey, here's a song, and it just starts adding different.
Well,
levels
that's kind of
depth.
What we've done with Prognosis Death to some extent.
Yes, yes,
we've got sort of this background of illustrative design happening and music now that's reflecting the storylines in the.
I've been told once again. I don't know if I should drop him in, but Mr. Chris Anderson's working on Prognosis Death Series 2 medley.
Oh, this is my secret project with
him.
Oh,
right. Sorry.
Very secret. It's just secret from all the fangirls who are out there listening to this podcast right now who just squeed their pants.
And that's right. I did. I got very excited. He's so polite. He's wonderful. Because supposedly I write emails a bit too officially. I write official-looking emails. Like, hey, we know each other. What are you? But it's how I write emails. I don't know what it is.
And he just love the fact that I can call him Mr. Anderson.
But yes. I think everyone does. Mr. Anderson. He goes, oh, it's very good. It's Matrix.
I've only heard that a million times. It's 1999.
It's, I watched The Matrix again recently, and I just kept giggling every time Hugo Weaving was on the screen saying that. I was very amusing. Very amusing.
I had an issue with a name the other night. For those who don't know, Greg got me a job doing tour guide stuff, and I meet a lot of people through that, and I met some woman who had a very odd name. She was Caucasian, but her name was Madhavi. And I said, Madhavi, that's a very curious name. Mm. And is there a story behind that? And she said, it's Indian. And then that was it. And I said, you don't look Indian. And she goes, I'm not dead. And I'm like, oh, I'm losing this audience.
On the other hand, when you know an odd name, I've had this, there's a girl in one of my classes at uni, and she obviously has a chip on her shoulder about her name. I won't say the name yet. But it just happens that I've worked with another girl in a different part of my life who had the same name, and I've seen it written down. And the name is spelt N-G-A-I-R-E.
N-G-A-I-R-E. Nagari.
It's Nairi.
Nairi.
Now, I would never know that. Like, you wouldn't. Yeah. I just happened to know her name. This girl a long time ago, his name was Nairi, and then I saw it written down and went, oh, that's how you spell the word Nairi. So now I was meeting this new girl, and I saw it looked down, and we had to wear name badges the first day of the tutorial, and it was N-G-A-I-R-E. Mm-hmm. So I went, hello, Nairi. Very, very matter of fact. And she lost her shit. Absolutely. Like, this girl was like, oh, my God. Like, you know the name. I was like, that broke the ice quite nicely. I was like, oh, thank goodness you didn't use Nagiri or something. You idiot.
Yeah. Oh, my poor wife, Aurélie. Oh, yeah. Well, I'm not even pronouncing it right.
Yes.
You can't pronounce it unless you're born in France.
That's right.
It's like, oh, Aurélie. I can't do it.
There's a lot of phlegm.
No, that's the thing. I'm adding the phlegm. The problem is to say it without doing the phlegm thing.
Right.
People are always getting her name wrong or misunderstanding her on the phone. And one day she just came home from work and went, fuck it, that's it. I'm going to Depol. I'm changing my name to Susie.
Change his name to just O'Reilly.
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 O'Reilly Beeston.
That works well. Now, the other thing you've been working on, let's move off your wife's name. For God's sakes, always bring up your bloody wife. I got married. I'm Dan Beeston.
I'm so happy. I never thought it would happen.
That's how you sound, by the way.
I'm doing it now.
You and Natalie were part, not before Impro Mafia, and The Fiend. You're part of some sort of panel show.
This is true. I think I mentioned on the podcast before, I got headhunted at Impro Gladiators to be the host. I'm so glad. I don't know whether I've told this story before, but you guys had already gone onto Impro Gladiators, and I'd heard that through two different ways. Oh yeah, Greg was really good, and we're really happy to have him back. Oh, Natalie was really good, we're really happy to have her back. And then it was my turn. I was like, oh God, this is what I've got to measure up to, is at least two sources of information coming back and like patting my ego. And I was like, oh, so, like that. That's a high thing to get to. I couldn't just be okay.
Yes,
I had to be good enough that I got wonderful feedback, so I could compare to the other people.
Oh God! Look, at one point, we didn't get that feedback. That's why it's suspect as hell.
Oh, yeah.
No one said to me this.
No.
I found out.
That's the best
sort
of feedback.
Yeah, kind of. Is it? I don't know.
Well, if someone says it to you, they could be just placating you.
How's my ego?
If people are talking about you behind your back and it's not like vitriolic, that's a win.
That's pretty rare. Oh. For me.
Can't imagine why.
I'm a lovable guy.
You're like a big furry teddy bear made out of knives.
That's right. I like that. I'm a velvet glove over a steel gauntlet.
Nice.
Wrapped in a steel gauntlet on the outside. Nah, it's all bullshit. But I'd rather someone come up and tell me that I rocked, you know, like it happened to you. You feel much better about yourself.
Well, that's the thing. I got off stage and these two young pups came up and so with big doe eyes and went, oh, we really enjoyed your show. This was Haley and Nick. We really enjoyed your show. We want you to host our game show.
And like, you went, are you taking the piss?
Yeah, I thought I was taking the piss. It's a practical joke.
Is Greg and Simon here somewhere?
Yeah.
Are they giving you money? I'm just wondering.
And I'm like, do you know how much I have invested in feedback from this show?
Oh,
I need to win.
The best feedback happened for someone last. It wasn't me. It was Natalie. Yeah. Last night, we're coming back. Go see, by the way. Everyone should go down to the Carnival's Edge next to, on South Bank.
Uh-huh.
Hopefully it'll be out before the 4th of October, this podcast.
Yeah, hopefully.
If it isn't, you missed it, 4th of October. Before the 4th of October, it's called Carnival's Edge. It's part of the Brisbane Festival. It's next to the big Ferris wheel on South Bank. It's all these tents and sideshow freak alley kind of stuff. But they have lots of different theatre shows. And we saw
Philippa Scoffey, who he'd hate to be called this, but he's like Darren Brown. He's like Darren Brown. He's like a magician, a mind reader, psychic, but he's not. He's great. And then
he's like a science mind reader?
What he says is, I'm going to... it's called Six Impossible Things Before Dinner. And he does six impossible things that look like mind reading. But he actually says, I'm not a mind reader. Mind reading doesn't exist. It's all bollocks. Mm. So he comes out and says, this is all a trick.
Mm.
And
then he pulls a rabbit out of his hat.
And then he proceeds to bamboozle you. It's fantastic. Wonderful. Great. Go see it. And the other one is The Boy with Tape on His Face. And it's wonderful, whimsy style show. Not magic, but a like physical comedy. Really wonderful. But I'm just trying to promote something for Brisbane. What's the point? Oh yes, we're walking back last night after seeing a few of these shows, and very drunk woman who I'd say looked. I'm going to come out and go, she looked like a bit of a bogan, Dan. She's a bit of a bogan. Like
no, not one of those lesser society people.
Bleach blonde hair and reeked of alcohol and
They're all like that, aren't they? Yeah, those people.
Those type of people. Anyway, she and we were sort of chatting away, and they were muttering. She was with her friends, and they were muttering sort of things to each other as we went past. And then she said, "You're a funny bitch." In that kind of voice. Terrible. I'm a bad man. But and we just kind of, you just walk through it. You just go, I'm going to ignore it. I'm not going to get punched in the face. I'm just going to keep going. And she went, didn't you hear me? You're a funny bitch. And you just go, dear, they're making contact. It's on like...
alert.
It's on like Donkey Kong. Oh, God. And then she went, I saw you in a show. I said, can't you hear me? You're a funny bitch. And finally, the Nat stopped and went, are you talking to me? And she went, yeah, I saw you at that show at the, what's that, on
Leichhardt
Street, which of course is speakeasy. And you're as funny as, because she obviously realized in some part of her brain calling someone a funny bitch might not be the best way of saying I like you. So she edited it to be, you're as funny.
No problem.
You're funny.
Apparently she wants us to commit anarchy.
Oh God! I'm being edited now. So it was Albion, but she went and saw Natalie at Albion and recognized her enough to and called her a funny bitch and screamed funny bitch at her on the street.
Nice.
That was nice. It was nice. And then, thank you very much. I'm a funny bitch. You know. But yes, from funny bitch to funny as. I thought that's kind of cute. Some part of brain. No. But it was good. That's the first time Natalie was very chuffed. So if you're a Bergen and you're drunk, please yell shit at Natalie. She loves it.
That's like going up to an ex-girlfriend who you've had a sexual history with and going, hey, cocksucker! It's technically true, but it's going to get the wrong connotations.
Yes. It's in context, isn't it?
Yeah.
But no, it all worked out well. We didn't get beaten up. Natalie felt better about herself. All is well.
Yeah, that sounds great.
It's rare.
I love it when I'm not beaten up in public.
I know. It's so rare nowadays.
So at any rate, yes, I got headhunted for this thing. And they did the screen test in a park. And I was like, oh, here we go. What have I got myself into now?
It's a dark park.
They gave me the script and I fucked the script up because I don't learn scripts. Mm. And then I just threw the script away and did it. And they were like, oh, now we're happy. Oh, they looked so miserable when I was screwing the script up. They're like, oh, we've made a terrible mistake. And I was like, you know me. You got me doing improv. I'll throw the script away and I'll do it. And I just did it off the cuff. And the beams on their little faces. They're like, oh, I'm so happy. We don't have to find someone else. Then they found someone else.
Motherfuckers. Natalie.
No. They found someone else to host the show. They replaced me.
Yeah. Oh, you're the host.
Yeah. I was supposed to be the host of the thing. And then they got Michelle and Smallsy from Nova Radio.
Right.
And they asked them, do they know anyone who could do stuff? And they said, oh, don't get our friend Dan, because he's really good and he'd be able to host. And they're like, ooh. And so there were two camps in the preparation stuff behind. Mm. So some people were like, no, get Dan Beeston to host. And other people were like, get Dan Anstey to host.
Oh, okay.
And so
How does Josh Thomas fit into all this?
He knew one of the lecturers and owed him a favour or something. Mm. And so he agreed to be in one of the panel shows.
Ah, I see, right.
And then at the last minute pulled out because he was moving to Melbourne. So that all fell through.
Oh, okay.
But he was only able to be there for 1 week, and each episode took 2 weeks to film, so they're going to have to stuff around with, like, special effects stuff.
Oh, okay, fair enough. So who actually hosted in the end then?
Dan Anstey, who is a guy who works with Michelle and Smallsy. Over. And he was great. He's much better than I would have been.
Right.
He did an amazing job, because he kept having to do their scripted jokes.
Oh.
And some of them were okay, but I don't think that I could have pulled them off anywhere near as well as he did. Mm. And he kept the interest up every... because he'd do like six different takes.
Right.
And he'd keep that imperative, whereas I would have been rolling my eyes by take two.
Mm. What's it, sir?
Because I'm so used to everything being new in improv.
You only do one take. Amateurs do two takes.
One take, Dan.
Yeah, bam. Cut it. Edit it. Put it on the reel. Boom. It's done. Put some reaction shots of me, and that's all it's going to be.
That's what this is.
That's what we had to do. It sounded like it was a lot of fun. You and Natalie were in it, and then Simon Feeney.
Yes.
And that just freaks me out, because I understand you and Natalie scrub up quite well, so you put on little suits and you look kind of like normal people. You can hide what you are. It's great. But the Fiend, he
what?
Damn, I didn't get that through.
What was that?
I didn't get it through. I thought, for a moment, no, screwed the con there. Oh, well. But the Fiend wears...
Teddy bear shaped set of knives.
Coming through the bushes at you. The fiend wears it on his face, literally. Like, he's got a beard that goes down to his navel, and he has this wacky hair. And those who know the Fiend love the Fiend, but if you don't know him, he's quite terrifying.
Mm.
He can be quite scary. So someone went, oh, we'll put him on the show. So you have this Viking-looking guy.
No. No, what happened was they went, oh, God, Josh Pot Thomas has pulled out, and we've got 36 hours to find a replacement.
So we'll get this person who looks just like Josh Thomas, the Fiend.
We'll get this other guy, because we literally run out of options. So we'll get this giant, scary, hairy guy.
But look at the guy who ate Josh Thomas. I killed him and I ate him. Oh, God. I'm full of the funny now. Oh.
But, of course, I can think of no one better to be on a show discussing old television shows.
This is true.
And, in fact, he was a wealth of information. Like, everyone else is on there making stupid jokes about TV shows. And then he'd come forward and go, well, actually, I'll tell you something very interesting thing about this TV show. And then and everyone would be like, wow, that's actually really entertaining and engaging.
Well, see, everyone puts, even he puts forward that he's this alternative, you know, Simon Feeney, like, oh, I'm the alternative guy. But really, he's landed gentry. He owns property. And, you know, he has people lives in his house. And he puts forward this very alternate lifestyle, but he's very middle class. Very middle class. Hang on. I've insulted Bogans. I've insulted the middle class. Have I done the upper class yet? I can't remember.
Existence insult the upper class.
Thanks. Well, I'm going to high-five you now. There you go. Bling! Did we get this joke there? Up top?
So what else was the panel? Oh, so on the panel show, we were just playing little games and answering questions about TV shows. And I don't know how much I can... I mean, I didn't sign an NDA, but still. It was stacks of fun and talking on a panel show, which is exactly what I wanted to do and exactly what I wanted to pitch, or exactly what I did pitch to Impro Mafia, but I didn't get to do it.
Maybe in the future.
So it's nice that I got to do it through a different avenue.
Yeah. It'd be a different animal, though.
Yeah, and it was a totally different... Like, it was a really fun thing to be involved in, like, cameras and lights and cuts and...
I've had one experience doing an actual movie. God, was it? Love. I can't remember the name of my own movie. I didn't know my movie I was in. It was a short, like, 25-minute movie, and it was about a girl going to a dating site and meeting men for dates.
Oh, yeah.
And I was the cuckolding husband who was trying to meet beautiful women. And I had a lisp. I don't know. That wasn't a lisp, by the way. That was the world's worst lisp, pretty much. But I had a lisp, and I had to, like, Desdemona. I kept thinking, I had a weird character, because I kept thinking... I'm gay. Like, reading this, I'm gay. I have a little dog, and I'm speaking in a certain way that's very stereotypically gay.
Yeah.
But I'm talking about my wife. I couldn't work this character up. Anyway, the point of this is...
Maybe she was your beard.
Maybe, but it never got brought up. I was trying to court this young, beautiful thing, like, across the table from me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd never done movie work before, and cameras get really close. I didn't realize that. So yeah.
Oh, wow, really?
I was at a table, like a dinner table for two, and the cameras were a foot from my head, and all the lights, you were locked in, you couldn't leave, and I wasn't like, they went, go to the toilet, because you're going to be there for hours. So they do all your bits with the camera in your face, over your shoulder, and they go to her, and they get all the reaction shots. And then they do it. You do the whole scene again, but just looking at my hand, so they can cut in me seductively and quite badly, seductively stroking the stem of the glass. We had to do that so many times. Went seductively rub the stem, Greg, and I do the scene whilst doing my lines, and she's there, and then they go, no, it's cut seductively. I'm like, okay, sorry, do it again, no, seductively. Yes, it was got embarrassing at the end.
Can we get a professional hand model in?
It was just I couldn't work out, because the more they're yelling at me or telling me off, the more tense you become, and you're going, I'm seductively scraping this glass. Like, but I got really drunk. The last bit of the story, I got absolutely pissed, because I'm sitting at a table and we have to drink. My thing is, every time I say a certain line, I've got to take a big slug of wine. Now,
and they didn't just switch it with Ribena or something?
No, they didn't.
That is fucking awesome.
And they screwed up big time, like the props master screwed up. And they got in lots of trouble that night, actually, because I got pissed. Now, I don't drink a red wine. And back then, I didn't drink a lot. This is quite a few years ago now. This is probably 8 years ago now. And I didn't drink it at all then. So I had no tolerance to alcohol. And so I'm just slugging this wine. And it's bitter, but I didn't think what it is. I just drink it. And you do take after take after take after take. And in the end, I'm going, you're the first
And they're like, what the hell is wrong? Oh my God, he's a spastic. What's going wrong? Like, oh God, he's had a stroke. Get him out. And oh God, he can't. I stood up to get away. I couldn't walk properly. And they realize what's happened. And they go check the wine. Like, oh my God, he's like drunk a carafe of wine in like a really short period of time. And they had to get me outside because they had to get the filming done that night. We were in a restaurant that they closed down that night.
Oh, yeah.
So it was all like, oh my God. And they had to get me outside. And they're walking me up and down, slapping me in the face. Going, it was like, oh, and I heard them yelling at the props master. And yes, I felt very sorry for her, but it was just a simple mistake.
Yeah, no, my stepbrother was an extra in Raw, and he was very disappointed when he got to play like a Viking or something, and they were all swilling these big mugs of ale, and it was all fake beer with salt mixed in, so the foam would stay on top.
Yeah, magic of television.
Yeah. Yeah, or you just get eat cats and glue them together.
it is a good experience. I think Impro Mafia, something we did want people, Impro Mafia players, to do, especially people who are... We have some people now. Sorry, I'm getting a bit off track here, but talking in circles. We have some players who are trained actors. Like Lauren Stain's a trained actor. Andy Curry has acting training. And there's a few others as well who are actual actors, or at least trained as actors. And they bring those skills to the stage. A lot of us aren't. We're librarians. We're tech people. We're people who have come from all sorts of walks of life and learned certain skills. So one of the ideas for a lot of Impro Mafia people is we want people to go out and experience, go watch different theatre and watch different productions, live productions, to watch how they do it, and also get new experiences, such as your panel show, because it just makes you a better person.
Yeah. Well, actually, that didn't happen. I very quickly realised that I was the talent, and I became a showbiz asshole in seconds.
No, I don't mean...
Sonny is like, hey, I'm out of water here. I need another water. No, get the bottles. No, don't you... Fill it up at a tap.
It's Mount Franklin's, you bastards. No, I don't mean that. You can do that. You can be a prima donna all you want.
Is this vegetarian? You've got me a vegetarian burger? Fucking hell. Hey, get the director over here. I want to have a go at the floor manager.
You weren't that bad, surely. I don't believe it.
Not quite that bad, but I could see how easily I could turn.
Oh, dear. The dark side.
Yeah.
That's terrible. No, what I mean is you get different skills. You bring it back.
We had a bad floor manager. There were four days, and there was a particular floor manager who kept having to go at me.
Did you have a lighting manager who kept walking into shot? And...
What the hell are you doing? What are you doing? What's wrong with you?
The unprofessional.
That's it. You and I finished professionally. That's it. I'd love to see you do that.
Actually, we did a bit of that. And we did a bit of, we'll do it live.
Fuck it. We'll do it live.
But,
I just said a naughty word.
There was.
Edit it. I ain't sound cultured. Sort it. I'll do it live.
To Dagonblast.
That sounds like a Lord of the Rings place.
To Dagonblast. We travel. Dun, dun, dun. I cannot travel with you, goblin. Oh, God. Wait a second. This was alcoholic. I'm talking to the prop manager.
Was I?
You're talking about...
The prop manager. No.
You became a monster. You became a prima donna.
And I ended up talking to the director and going, okay, the floor manager is... pissing me off and taking my buzz off. I've got to be upbeat and playful, and she keeps stepping in, and what the fuck's with her problem? And he goes, no, she's always like that. I'm like, well, she should stop. And he's like, actually, you're probably right. And so he went and had a talk to her, and it was deliciously awkward all afternoon, and I loved every minute of it.
And the thing is, stage managers, floor managers, they own you. That's the thing. It all depends how you look at it.
Yeah, it depends whether you're like being headhunted and are doing something for free for 4 weeks. Their uni course.
Yeah.
Suddenly, because I was like, I feel really bad about sort of playing with this item that apparently I'm not supposed to play with, even though I didn't know.
Yep.
And then one of the other people are like, we're not getting paid. And I'm like, you're right, we're doing these motherfuckers a favor. She's having to go at me for like dismantling a bell that I could just wind back together.
Yeah,
you're right. I'm going to talk to the director. And where's my water?
Oh, dear. And you'll never get invited back again.
Nope. No. Showbiz arsehole. I'm Brisbane's answer to Bill Murray. What? Speaking of slander.
Isn't Bill Murray loved by all, et cetera, et cetera?
No. He's really? A terrible person to work with, apparently. Oh, okay, especially if you're Drew Barrymore.
Really?
I don't know. Oh, they hated him. During Charlie's Angels, all three of them used to get together and bitch about him constantly.
Really?
Apparently he's a real arsehole. At the same time, this is the same guy who at like the age of 55 or something, just turns up unannounced to college parties and hangs out with people. and people go, my God, Bill Murray just turned up in my house.
Right. Or Peter Venkman, that'd be mine. Oh. Peter Venkman just turned up in my house. Yeah. I say, how old I am.
I'm tweeting.
That'd be cool. That would be very exciting. Yes, as long as it wasn't the guy from Awesome Translation, he can go to hell.
I love that film.
Geez, it's sick in the mind. You and everyone else. I know I'm in the minority here. Angry, angry minority. It's a rubbish movie. No, it's a good movie. It's a rubbish end. There you go.
I love the end.
It's weak ending. There you go.
Why don't we were discuss a topic?
We were going to discuss coming up with ideas for improv shows. It's not set yet, and nothing like there'll be official words going out for people. But if you're listening to this podcast, so all three of you, and you have some ideas, that fell flat, didn't it?
There are at least 12 people who listen to this.
The
podcast.
Audience.
The audience.
Dear
audience. They can save on bandwidth by just all going over to one of your houses and downloading it once and listen to it as a group.
We should invite them in, give them a few beers, they can watch us through the glass, and they can just have it on a speaker.
Oh, that's not a bad idea.
And we can see it live.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll do it live!
Yeah, look at the waveforms maxing out like a bitch.
But so Improv Mafia, in the next couple of months, is going to be asking for shows for next year. Now, these are show ideas for the Arts Theatre. And the Arts Theatre, it has a set venue. It's an actual theatre, so it has to be a long-form show.
So this is for the occasional weeks where we're not doing Prognosis Death?
That's not true. Next year, you don't know how much I can say, but I'm going to say it anyway. Because, just because I don't speak for Improv Mafia, I'm not wholly accountable for my own actions. Well, that backwards.
No, that'll do. That'll work.
What's your thing about... Just because I'm...
Because I'm wholly responsible for my actions isn't going to stop me.
Stop me, that's it. Look, in the next year, we're going to have actual seasons. A couple of seasons, if not three seasons. I don't know exact numbers. And that means two-week seasons. So that's pretty cool. Spread through the year. And then we have every Sunday we want. I don't know how many... That doesn't mean we're going to fill every Sunday, but we've been offered those Sundays.
Yep.
So that means we can do pretty amazing things, much bigger than we were doing in 2009. The extension of what we were doing. So we're going to put on some... every night, six shows for a series of whatever we're going to do.
Yep.
And I'm assuming Prognosis Death will get in there somewhere. And because I want to. and other things will get put up as well. But this leaves a lot of Sundays we want to fill with different ideas.
Mm.
And that means you need to come up with interesting ideas that work well on an actual theatre stage.
Mm.
And that's what we're going to talk about today.
Yep. And the thing is, you can't just pick a genre.
No.
Or you can't just pick something you like. And go, let's do that as impro.
Yes.
The wrong way to address it. Although it's a good way to inspire ideas and discussions about how to make a new show. But when it comes down to it, it's like a video game in that it's the mechanics of how it works that should drive the show.
Different about it? What makes it worth watching?
Yeah.
Why would I watch it for an hour and not just 5 minutes?
Well, for instance, in Agatha Holmes, it was an endowments game. It was a long-form endowments game.
It was, yes.
And endowments games were created for theatre sports, TM, because they were based on a particular type of game theory.
Mm. Yes.
And a lot of what we've been doing with our long-form ends up revolving around a particular piece of game theory.
Yes.
Like
exactly how it should be. I've been championing this for so long. So I'm so glad we're doing it now.
Like the radio one, the radio play.
Mm.
It was basically a sound effects scene in that all the foley was... The foley was the gag or the handle upon which the enjoyment of the story hung.
Yes.
So even if the story was going pear-shaped, people were still getting lots of enjoyment out of watching the sound come together.
I wouldn't say gag. I didn't see it really as a gag. It's the mechanics. That was the actual show. This thing. You can't just do... You could do a scene on Knight Rider. You go, I love Knight Rider. We'll do a five-minute scene, and you'll pretend to be Michael and Kit, and you run around and be silly. But you couldn't turn that into an hour-long show that people would actually watch.
Yeah. Not unless you could figure out a way to... find a mechanic that replicated the style of show, but
yes, and that's the
and you could thing. And you go and you stare and go, all right, well, it involves inanimate objects speaking, which is a small voices scene.
Yes, there you go.
There is a way of
Prognosis Death is based on the blood originally, and the trope of medicine and
medical soap operas.
Medical soap operas, and so it wasn't actually about those characters; it was about the mechanical. The mechanic of it was the soap opera scene. We did working in three quarters and that sort of stuff.
And it was only through workshopping where we realized just how important the relationships are between the characters.
Yes, in fact, more important than anything else. Agatha Holmes, once again, relationships are very important as well. We've learned. I think all long form is all based on relationships.
Yeah.
I don't think you can honestly say everything is going to be. If you don't have good relationships, it's over.
Indeed.
But you can't design those relationships. They've got to create. You can set up the original idea, but they will organically evolve when you rehearse. And the key word there is when you rehearse, not if you rehearse. You have to rehearse these shows.
Yeah.
In fact, Improv Mafia won't let you put it on stage unless we know you've done two minimum of 2 rehearsals, hopefully 3 rehearsals.
Mm. Only because hopefully enough rehearsals that you it stops sucking.
Well, that's right. Well, at least you go, there is something. There is a germ of an idea here that can be sold. So what people say, well, what ideas? It can be any idea, but it has to have some sort of mechanic involved that you can say, this is the mechanic. You can't just be dudes on stage. Otherwise, you're not really doing... I'm about to say not doing improv. People would go, that's not true. You're not doing what we want to see on the arts theatre stage. We are no longer just doing... sounds a bit pretentious, but we're no longer just doing improv scenes. We're doing improv / theatrical stuff.
Mm.
And there is a difference here, and people might roll their eyes, but there is actually a big difference between the two. We don't expect it to be instantly all made up, 100%. Some of the, like Prognosis Death is probably 70% improvised, 30% structured. I think that would be a fair estimate. There are ideas and tropes and concepts that come in now. Some more than others.
Yeah.
And there are ideas that come. Agatha Holmes is a lot more improvised because it was only one night.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get away with it. But doing seasons requires a bit more forethought. It's a good idea to think about what is your show about, not the narrative, not the subject. But what is the skill that is required, and what are you offering? What game or impro talent? No, impro skill, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
You're bringing to the stage, and if you can answer that, you're probably a good step on the way to actually having a decent show.
Yeah. Well, why don't we just deconstruct Touched by Hammer, because you're around to see that.
Yes. Because I've seen it in different incarnations.
Because the original one, it was basically a genre thing. We would like to do. A rip-off of the sort of...
Highway to Heaven
style.
John Landis?
Yeah, John Landis, whatever, and some guy crossing middle America, solving little tiny personal problems, but with God and Jesus initially, and then it eventually turned into Odin and Thor.
Mm.
And so those original shows basically involved Thor being dumb and getting dumber with each week.
Yes.
And just a basic impro story falling into place over 15, 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But then when we tried to do it in the theatre and we tried a couple of rehearsals, it just wasn't working.
Okay.
And we needed to figure out a stronger format of why it wasn't working.
Mm.
And
what was the answer with that one?
I can't remember. I was hoping you remembered.
You had to... I think it was heavily based on Loki. Loki became quite important in the latest version of Touched by Hammer. Loki drove the story, which I think that you always could say that Loki was a narrator, really.
Mm.
It didn't go that far, but we've learned a lot. I think that narrators of stories are quite useful in long-form impro.
Yeah.
You have to trust your narrator, but they can...
Because you don't have to worry about the plot fairy then.
Because they are the plot fairy.
Yeah, because I remember watching Six of the Best years and years ago and just getting completely baffled at one point, and Troy Baker just came out and said, all right, stop everything. I'm the plot fairy. And here is what's happening, and here is what these characters' motivations are. Let's move on.
That's right. A narrator can, in some form, can
do that organically.
Yes, and it's also clever because you're part of it. You weren't impressing your ideas on the outside. You were internally shaping it. That's what I'm saying. It's 30s or 70-30 or something like that.
Yeah,
improvised or not, because there is conversations going on backstage. Obviously, you can't just have 6 people not talking to each other, stepping on stage and gelling instantly.
Mm.
It requires a lot more than that, I think, to be fun and interesting anyway.
Yeah, and so that people just don't get off track. Yes. Like if 2 people are working at cross purposes, then you're dead. You are dead in the water.
And that's right. And it comes down to doing narrating for Prognosis Death, being the main job in Prognosis Death, sometimes you would end, if not disputes, but inconsistencies. So someone would say, I thought X was happening, and someone else would say, I thought Y was happening. And as a narrator, you would go, I'm going with X, because I think that's what the story needs. Very sorry. And then thank God I had a good team with me who went, cool, we don't care. Like, yeah, it's fine. I thought it was Y, it's not Y.
Great. The thing, I mean, as long as we're not going to look like a dick on stage... And the only time people ever got angry was when they're out there doing one thing and they thought they were supposed to be doing another.
Yes, that was, that's right. That was confusing. Yeah, that's lack of communication.
Yep.
That's right. But it's. I think it's interesting that new ideas are tried, and it's good for new people to come and get involved and put forward their ideas, because these will be new, strangely enough, and not just rehashes of old ideas. And Impro Mafia needs to kind of keep trying different things. And some will be more successful than others, especially some nights you're going to go, oh, well. Didn't quite pay off, but the really good ones will get shelved, and then you'll be probably invited back later on when there's a season, and so you might get invited back to do a 5-show season in the future. Like you might, some shows are good once, and some shows have potential to go over and over again.
Yeah.
And people enjoy watching it more than once. So, for example, though I thought it was a good show, Newsarama, Wade threw it, I was meant to do, and then Wade took over because I couldn't. I had no ideas for it.
Mm-hmm.
It was a great show. I enjoyed watching it. I can't see it as night after night after night.
And that had a very strong handle too, which was basically it had a narrator all the way through. It was basically a typewriter scene.
Yes.
An extended typewriter scene, which was quite fun to do.
But my problem was that it was one person saying yes or no, typewriter scene, but that meant the audience, and I was an audience member for that one, I felt the audience was not being involved in it. It wasn't up to us, because Alex was a typewriter guy, and he would say, I don't want to hear that. What?
Was it? Oh, in the second half, in the long form, I was actually...
Oh, yeah,
I keep turning to the... Yeah, it's my story being told.
I was thinking the first half, sorry. And Alex said, I don't want to hear that. I don't want to see that. And they all, I do want to see that. I'm not saying just negative things. I want to see that. And unfortunately, as the audience member, I would go, no, I do want to see that. Like, and I felt there was a disconnect between what was going on stage and what was going on in
Alex
the audience.
Alex has no taste.
Which I think you have to bow to your audience. Otherwise, it's television. Like, you must have a big glass wall up and we all watch it. And that's not what impro is. That's why you can't record. Well, it's very hard to videotape impro and then watch it again because you miss something.
Unless
wrong.
You're in the show and you've got a massive ego that needs stroking and you watch the same thing over and over again.
I don't know. Who does that?
Natalie and I.
Really? Oh God! I
just remember the other week when it was like, oh, let's go have a look at like the prognosis of death.
Oh, Jesus.
In just our bits.
Oh,
and
so we watched
it, and my poor wife is just like, oh, let it go.
What's French for let it go? Does she mutter in French?
Mon homme de mort. Your husband? What?
Kill the go? What? What the hell? Yes, that's a bit sad. I'll admit that. But it's still, you can't video. I don't think you can videotape a lot of improv. And you watch it on stage. Keeping that in mind, though, reversing what I just said, that means when you're in a theatre, you should probably try and connect your show to the audience, make sure they feel like they're part of it. It might just be at the start of it, they get information, obviously, offers from the audience. But there can be a bit of two-way street communication. I think it's important to have that. Otherwise, it's just you've just created a badly written theatre show.
Yeah.
And that's bad.
Yes.
You can't
100%
just go,
agree.
Write a theatre show.
Yeah.
Write a script. That'd be great. You'd probably do very well. But you can't go, oh, we'll improvise a theatre show. It doesn't kind of work.
You've got to improvise an improv show.
That's right.
And it's got to be based in improv theory and improv skills.
Yes. That's right. Which means you kind of have to know what those skills are. And I think we're only slowly getting there ourselves.
Yeah.
Since the start of 2009, maybe the end of 2008 kind of thing. It's been quite recently we started realizing these ideas for a long... Why are our long-form shows successful? And the ones that are, you keep seeing the same thing over and over again. You keep seeing what we're talking about.
Well, that first Wake was quite nice, and that went around... That was a kind of a narrated thing too, but on a different level, where there was just lots of flashbacks. It was like a reminiscence scene, in fact.
Yes.
All of these long forms that did really well, based on very strong... theatre sports game styles.
And what's interesting, but they weren't designed that way. It wasn't if Wade came up with the Wake of Simon Chesterfield going, oh, it's a reminiscence scene. He came up with the idea, and then later on we went, what's this? Oh, it's reminiscence.
Yeah.
And these ideas suddenly occur to you. And that's when you go, oh, we're all on the same page now. Yep. We all understand where it's going. You can tweak it, and it works, which is pretty impressive. It's good to know these things, because one of the things, otherwise you're just throwing shit at the wall, and sometimes it sticks and sometimes it doesn't.
Well, another thing that people do, another mistake that people make, is that you can't do a comedy show. You've got to find something serious to do as improv, which makes it funny. You can't do Get Smart.
Oh, I see, yes.
You've got to do...
Yes, I see. Well, your comedy can come from... It'll come from the premise and come from the characters and the...
I think you'll find that's pronounced premise.
I think, no.
Yeah.
Nice try, though. You're taking it back. Dan's taking back the word. Well done.
Where's my face mauve?
Is it? Mauve. I think it is mauve.
Oh, fuck. It is mauve. Fuck the joke.
It's mauve.
Man.
I had
that was going to be gold, and now it's going after the credits.
Just point out that your little stuff up with premise got pointed out to famous British comedians, because Natalie can't help herself, so she points out to famous British comedians that you say premise, and I went, oh, isn't that Dan a crazy fellow, and then she went, shut up, you say nemesis. And I went, so you got gunned down in the distance. Everyone had a good giggle at Dan, who we don't know, but I'm standing right in front of the car trying to impress this nice man who I quite like, and that's like, you suck. Like, I'll just sit in the corner.
Hurtful.
She is quite.
There's no point. There's no reason for that.
She felt bigger, so that's good.
Jeez, you think a pug is a friendly dog, and then it turns and it goes on you.
It's like Milo. It's just all on you. That's it. Terrible. Curious cat and a pug. This pug.
And time! You have been listening to Greg Robotham. He's got a secret blog project that you'll never, ever find.
If you can find it, I will reward you.
With content?
No. I don't make that promise. Well, there might be content soon. That's a part of my secret project. It's a different secret project I'm working on. But anyway.
Yeah, all these things started but never finished.
That's true. Well, some of them are flash in the pan, late at night craziness, and some of them are slow boilers.
And so I'm like, Dan, I need you to spend like 4 hours trying to get this website working for me.
That was Natalie. You should do this thing. Yeah, I should do this thing because Natalie's saying I should do the thing. Yeah. And suddenly I'm like, oh, women.
I'm always playing Milo to your Otis. Oh, God. I'm Dan Beeston. You can check out my webcomics at www.invisiblespiders.com. For news about Impro Brisbane, visit impromafia.com. Thanks to David Beachy for our theme music. Hosting for our time is decisively provided by Civic Net Web Design.
And I didn't bring up at all in the whole podcast, so I am now, of course. I didn't bring up at all that you have been declared the best technical improviser in Brisbane. By one of our friends. Whilst I was standing right there.
Best technical.
I don't want to say who it was, but it was at that party, yes. You were there. You were quite drunk at the end, so was he. That's amazing.
Yes,
one.
I was.
He was quite drunk too.
His decision-making skills were very poor.
And I was standing there, and I went... It was quite cute, because he was like, oh, yes, you... Dan, you're one of the best technical improvisers in Brisbane. And I went, I'm right here. Like, as a joke, I'm right here. And he looked at me and went, you're all right. And I went, I'm leaving with my dignity.
I don't even remember that.
Oh, God. I wish I'd brought it up now. I went, Simon Feeney and I are going to have to spend so much time streaming. Cocksucker. It was so much work. I tell you, he pumped you up so well.
Oh, look, I'm never coming back from being the talent. Oh, Jesus.
I mean, you're a superhero now.
I know.
But where is the talent? I'm here to be cool.
What's your superhero power? Oh, I can make witty jokes about Lost Season 3.
That's right. Season 4, he'd save us all, but Season 3, pfft. Oh, look, polar bears. Oh, I don't know, that's probably Season 1.
Season 1, I think.
Oh, God.
I think it's Episode 1.
I'm not even good enough to be a sidekick.
I've never even watched the show. That's how powerful I am.
This is when we have to say something wrong.
Yeah, say something witty and defamatory.
That's right now. I think you put it at the end of the podcast. And goes,
is it libelous or
slander?
Oh, never slanderous.
One's written down and one's not. But God knows which one it is.
Libel's written down, I think.
Is it? Oh, ask slander. Liam. That's what we have Liam for.
Before Liam, do, that fucker.
Before I do anything illegal,
I'm going to write down a thing about Liam.
Yeah, every time I do something illegal, I always call Liam first. He gets upset that. I'm holding the knife, Liam. I'm holding the knife.